from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We'll turn now to look at the new year after holiday celebrations. Many are planning to take part in a dry January. That's the increasingly popular move of voluntarily not drinking for a month. We've invited a couple of people on the program to share their tips for how to do dry January successfully and meaningfully. And if you need extra motivation, some studies are even suggesting that there are health benefits to taking a month off alcohol. Joining me now is Keith Humphrey. He is professor of psychiatry at Stanford School of Medicine. Good morning to you, Keith Humphreys.
Good morning.
And thanks for joining us. First, what are the origins of dry January?
Well, it started in Britain. There's a charity there that observed the fact that, you know, a lot of British people drink a lot of the time. And I'm not talking about what most people think of as alcoholism, but just sort of there was a culture of heavy drinking that many people had. And they thought it would be good if people just took a time out and said, you know, is this a good idea for me or not? And that's when they started Dry January, and it's caught on like wildfire. It's quite popular there, and I'm happy to see it spread over to our country.
And what would you say are the benefits of doing a dry January if folks are considering it?
Well, what most people notice quickly is they sleep better. You know, it's quite common if you drink, you know, particularly wine, to wake up a few hours later and have a sleepless moment and then wake up not feeling refreshed in the morning. So they get their sleep back. Often drop a few pounds as well, because there's a lot of sneaky calories in alcoholic beverages people don't realize. And also, once you've had that drink, you may be more inclined to have that extra slice of chocolate cake on top after dinner. So those are the immediate benefits for most people. And then for other people, it's just thinking more carefully about their alcohol consumption. If they've fallen into a habit, which is really common around here in the Bay Area, of automatically I come home and it's 6 o'clock and I pour myself a drink, to just walk that through in their head of like, do I really want to do that every single day? Do I want to do it as a habit? And is that good for me? And for a lot of people, it leads them to rethink that. And not that they, you know, necessarily become abstainers for life, just that they say, you know, wait a minute, this is something, you know, I want to make this a special occasion thing, not a routine thing, because over time, that's going to be bad for my health.
We're talking with Keith Humphreys. He's a professor of psychiatry at the Stanford School of Medicine, and we're talking about taking a break from drinking. Have you tried this? Did you learn something about your relationship to alcohol through the process? Or what advice or strategies do you have to do this successfully? The number to call, 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. And you can post your questions or comments on Facebook, Twitter, our website, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And we've got Ruby Warrington with us. She's the author of the book Sober Curious. Welcome to Forum, Ruby Warrington.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. And I understand you are a fan of Dry January as well, mainly because you feel like it gives people a ready-made excuse if they don't want to drink?
Absolutely. In researching my book, Sober Curious, which is really presenting exactly that idea, why do we often blindly go along with the drinking culture without questioning it? And really giving people permission to question their drinking and whether alcohol is actually something that's benefiting them in any way. But often it can be very intimidating to take a break from drinking. There's a lot of peer pressure to drink if it's interwoven into our social life, which it is for most of us in America. And I'm from the UK, so I know about that British drinking culture too. It can be very intimidating to take a break. And I think having something like Dry January gives people an easy answer. If they turn up to an event or a dinner and they're not drinking, they're abstaining that night, the answer to the question is, what's up? Well, I'm taking a break for Dry January. So for that reason, I think it's a great development.
Yeah. Keith Humphreys, you've made the point that it's funny how if you go to a party and drink, nobody asks why you're drinking. But if you don't, they ask why you're not drinking. So the cultural pressure or the cultural norm is quite intense.
It is, and I completely agree with Ruby that very moment of awkwardness is enough for a lot of people to take a drink when they really don't want one. And being able to say, you know, well, this is a thing now, you know, and actually it's kind of like a cool thing you may not know about, and I'm doing it. It's called Dry January. It gets them over that sort of socially awkward hump, and it also can attract social support. Just like if, you know, you have a jogging group, you're more likely to stick to your jogging. If other people around you are doing a Dry January, that's easier for you to persist and finish out the month.
But Ruby Warrington, do you feel like That is changing. That cultural expectation is changing a little bit, especially among millennials.
There is more and more research that shows that younger generations, millennials and particularly Gen Z, are drinking consistently less than their parents, to the point that I'm sort of thinking, is alcohol the new cigarette? Will it be a case in 10, 20 years' time when we look back at how we used to drink and rely on alcohol in the way that we do, as being actually very unhealthy, and that it may even become socially unacceptable for future generations? And so, yeah, I think that, you know, initiatives like Dry January are easing that conversation, opening up that conversation. Why are we so reliant as a culture and individually on alcohol? What's it, what need is it fulfilling for us, which we can find other ways of satisfying that don't come with all the toxic side effects?
Mm-hmm. And of course, bars are picking up on that by offering a lot more non-alcoholic options, sounds like.
Absolutely. And drinks companies, you know, some of the big drinks companies are predicting that by 2020, you know, 20% of their output is going to be alcohol free. There are all kinds of alcohol free beer, craft beers coming onto the market, alcohol free spirits like Seedlip and Kin Euphoric. There's a whole new category in alcohol free, adult alcohol free drinks, shall we say, that offer more options to a non-drinker than typical sodas and sugary juices and mocktails.
Well, Keith tweets, I'm doing a dry January. I want to lose a few holiday pounds, prove to myself that I'm not wholly dependent, and sleep better. It's that prove to myself I'm not wholly dependent that I'm struck by, Keith Humphreys. If you want to gauge your relationship to alcohol, what are some things that you can do to try to get at this question of how much you rely on this drug and what really the characteristics of your relationship to alcohol are?
So, you know, first off, make the public declaration, which you just did, I think is in itself a good thing, because that also gives other people a chance to give you feedback. So, you know, if you come home and say, you know, I'm going to do a dry January, and your spouse goes, thank God, right, then you get some information. Or if they ask you, even if they just have a more neutral response to it, why are you doing that? You know, yourself talking it through aloud with another person could sort of help you reflect on that. You can also just look at simple indicators like how much of your money, of your pocket money, are you spending on alcohol? It can be a lot, you know, particularly if you drink out in bars, or if you ask yourself honestly, how many mornings do I wake up and I don't feel very good, and I've been drinking the night before, and that affects, you know, my crabby, and you know, I don't get as much done at work and that kind of thing, and you know, being honest with yourself, you know, sometimes it helps people even to write it down and be, you know, look, I drank here, here, and here. Keep track of it on your phone, and some people do that. All those things sort of forces us to engage the rational part of ourselves that can, you know, look at our habits and say, you know, do I really want to keep doing this in the way that I have or not?
And if you do have concern that you may have a problem, what are some resources that you can point us to?
I'm glad you brought that up, because it is, if you are really at the severe end of alcohol problems, it's first off, it may be very hard to persist through a month, and second, even if you do, that's not going to eliminate your problem. So fortunately, you know, there are a range of options available for people. There are medications like a Camprasate is one, Naltrexone is another that helps some people stop, that can be prescribed by doctors. There are a whole range of mutual help organizations in the Bay Area, for example. We have, you know, trusty old Alcoholics Anonymous, which works really well for people pursuing abstinence. We also have Moderation Management, which is for people who want to keep drinking but want to learn to drink in a more healthful fashion, and lots of different, you know, choices in between those two extremes. Also, some people may want to, you know, psychotherapy, go to an alcohol treatment program. Those are other ways that many people find their pathway to recovery. There's not a right way to do it. It's any pathway that gets you to a healthy situation is the good pathway.
Well, let me go to Todd in Pleasanton. Hi, Todd.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm a moderate drinker, and I've, you know, and honestly, to tell you the truth, I use alcohol as a means of dealing with pain management, basically. Mm. So it's not I actually don't like alcohol, to tell you the truth. But I guess my question is, why January? Why not February, March, whenever?
Well, Ruby Warrington, people who have done Dry January, they can continue and often do, right? Because they do feel like it is a benefit.
Absolutely. I think January, because it comes right after the holiday season, which is typically a time from Thanksgiving onwards that people tend to overindulge, shall we say, not just in alcohol, and but also in rich, sweet, salty foods and all of the things. And so January rolls around with people feeling kind of ready for a detox, ready to press a reset on all of that. But yeah, my advice and what I encourage with Sober Curious, and this applies to, you know, really examining your drinking and your habitual drinking in the long term as well, is to approach it with an open mindset. Assume that you're actually going to really enjoy it. Go into it with a mindset less of what you're removing or abstaining from and more about what you're going to create space for in your life. Hmm. You have all those undrunk, unhungover hours at your disposal and all that extra energy that you're going to get from sleeping so much better. And really, you know, if you are enjoying yourself, if you're actually really noticing that it feels great not to drink, why not continue? Why just limit it to a month? Why not use this as a springboard to examine your drinking habits and perhaps step back in the long term?
Yeah, so a shift in perspective from what you're losing to what you're actually gaining. And Sandy writes, I tried a dry fall for 120 days last year, and I experienced much better sleep, huge reduction in hot flashes, lost 7 pounds, saved hundreds of dollars, and my skin looked great. I went back to drinking for the holidays, and I hated it. I'm back to dry again. David tweets, we're doing 21 days, January 5th to the 26th. I don't think we could do more. I'm not sure we can do 21 days, but we will give it a go. For those folks who want some tips for how to make it through, what are some things that you can offer, Ruby Warrington?
Well, I think that thing, you know, maybe you could even write down as you enter into this all of the reasons for your choosing to do a dry January, ranging from how you want to feel, whether you want to save money, maybe you do want to lose weight, or maybe you just really are curious about, like, what is life like without alcohol? And keep those reasons front of mind, so that if you do find yourself in a situation where either you're experiencing undue kind of peer pressure to drink, or you're confronted with unexpectedly challenging cravings that it's hard to resist, you can remind yourself of all of the reasons that you're doing this. I think that's a really important perspective, again, to take into the month with you.
And Keith Humphreys, if you do have that one drink, I mean, is it shot, basically, that your dry January efforts, or should you just kind of let that go?
Oh, yeah, I don't think you should quit. You know, if on January 20th you have a drink, I wouldn't throw in the rest of the month. I mean, it would still be a good month for a lot of people to have, you know, 30 days of no drinking, even if they can't get every single one. And you just take that as a learning experience. Like, you look at it and say, why did that happen? And, so, you know, it was because, you know, I hung out with my friend who always drinks. And so now I know if I, you know, I either have to find a different way for us to hang out, or, you know, when I see him, I should, or her, I should expect that to happen. You know, it's not intended to be a punitive experience, or, you know, where we just judge ourselves success or failure. It's a learning experience.
Well, Caroline writes, definitely agree dry January is a great idea, if not a bit intimidating and not very fun sounding. But my tip, pour seltzer into a wine glass and make it fancy with orange, lemon or lime slices, ginger sticks or mint. Make lots of flavored water, cucumber, berries and herbs. You're going to love it. And you can indulge again later. Is it helpful to remove the alcohol that's in your home completely, Keith Humphreys?
Oh yeah, that is often really useful for any kind of you know, behavior you're kind of trying to change. Like, you know, if you're trying to lose weight, don't, once you've brought the Doritos into the house, you know, they will disappear through the magic of their tasty appeal. If you have a lot of alcohol around the house and you're trying to stop, it's much, much harder than if you just don't bring it in the first place. And likewise, not hanging out in places where it's super available. So, you know, when someone wants to connect, suggest, why don't we meet at a coffee shop instead of a bar? That's going to make it a lot easier for you to persist in this than if you're in a place where all the sights and smells and sounds of alcohol are right in front of you.
And am I right, Ruby Warrington, that this is something that you know, yourself engaged in to look at your relationship with alcohol? Like, from a personal experience, you actually felt like maybe you really did need to reassess your relationship to the drug.
Absolutely. It was about almost 10 years ago that I began to get what I call sober curious, which means, you know, began to really question everything about my relationship to alcohol, from the times I was drinking, how it was impacting me overall, and not just physically, but in terms of my mental and emotional well-being as well. The expectations about drinking, my cravings for drinking. I wasn't drinking in what would be classified an alcoholic way. My drinking didn't look like that, but I knew that it wasn't healthy and it didn't feel good. And for me, it's been just a slow process of trial and error over the past almost decade, like I said, of getting to a place now where I've really proven to myself that actually I don't need alcohol for anything, that all the things I was looking for in drinking, I can absolutely generate for myself in other ways. And part of that has been, you know, I talk in my book about the importance of embarking on sober first. And I think this is a really good advice for sober for Dry January as well. When you're attempting a month off drinking, you can sort of say, oh, well, I just won't go out this month. I'll just kind of postpone all social engagements until I'm drinking again or whatever it is. But actually putting yourself into situations where you would typically drink and proving to yourself that you don't need a drink to enjoy it yourself, or you don't need a drink to fit in. And if you do feel uncomfortable, you can actually just leave and that's fine. That can be very, very empowering. And when it comes to rewiring those habitual patterns and behaviors that mean we reach for a drink without thinking about it, I think going against the grain of that wiring and like I said, proving to yourself that you don't actually need alcohol is really beneficial.
Well, let me go to Bob in San Gregorio. Hi, Bob.
Hi, good morning. I just started my dry January. I have a Thursday occasion where we go someplace and listen to music, and I had a beer instead of three or four beers. But what really got me started on this is I just finished reading Jack London's John Barleycorn, and it is a frighteningly stark reality of social drinking, and especially the last couple of chapters where he is really talking to the reader about his current situation.
Bob, I think we're having a slight problem with your line, but it's good to know that reading Jack London's book was helpful to you and could be helpful to others if they're thinking about it. And it's also interesting to hear Bob talk about having, you know, one as opposed to three or four beers, because, you know, this listener writes, I found a happy medium drinking no more than 3 days a week, two drinks a day, having a third drink only on a rare special occasion. Moderation feels great, which could be another way to do this, Keith Humphreys, like a dry-ish January.
Yeah. I mean, I would suggest if you want to moderate, it's still worth trying the period of abstention. A, to give you a timeout to just think free of the influence entirely about what you want. But B, because if you consume alcohol regularly, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 days a week, what happens is your body becomes tolerant to it and it needs more to get to the same place. You know, to get your buzz takes that third or fourth beer rather than one or two. And if you take that time off, you will find, most people, that you don't need as much to have that feeling. So oddly enough, if you want to end up a moderate drinker in February, your odds improve if you aren't drinking in January.
Well, this listener writes, this is my third dry January. I enjoy the reset after the holidays. I've noticed that I resist certain less healthy foods while not drinking. A nice steak is just not as good without a glass of red wine, and I may not order a burger and fries if I'm not having a beer. Well, Keith Humphreys, Ruby Warrington, thank you so much for talking with us about this.
Thank you.
Keith Humphreys is professor of psychiatry at Stanford School of Medicine. And Ruby Warrington, thanks for being here. She is the author of Sober Curious. Thanks also to our listeners for sharing their stories and experiences. You've been listening to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.